Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
During the 2016 campaign, Donald Trump became a lightning rod for oppressive gender roles, the reports of improper sexual advances, of Trump's alleged behavior in the workplace, and distasteful comments about touching women's bodies, judging women by their physical appearance. All of this turned the campaign into something of a referendum on women's rights. In the end, though, Hillary Clinton lost a sizable chunk of mostly white women voters. But this weekend, women and men across the country will march in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere in an event to say that gender issues are still very much in play.
These prejudices, these hateful beliefs that people have, or really it's the discomfort, I think, with viewing women as potentially equal or potentially just as complicated, diverse, nuanced as males.
Julie Chelfo is author of the book The Women Who Made New York. Julie says it's time to end thinking of women as an afterthought. At this week's marches, the ghosts of all the outspoken and unforgettable characters Chelfo learned about will be present in spirit, she says.
I was absolutely stunned to learn about this woman, Hetty Green, who was known as the Witch of Wall Street. And it was such a terrible name, you know, the Witch of Wall Street. And she was in the Guinness Book of World Records for being the world's largest miser. But when you dig a little deeper, and there's some wonderful biographies about her available, you learn that she was should have been called the Oracle of Wall Street because she was so phenomenally astute at maneuvering the markets. And in part, it was because from the time she was 6 years old, her father, who was an investor, had insisted that she read the morning papers to him. And she used to read commodities reports and all these things. So by the time her father passed away and she inherited a small amount of money, I think it was $1 million, she began investing it. And by the time of her death, was one of the richest people in the world. And so she operated on Wall Street, but the men couldn't stand her. She was so successful. She was very miserly, it's true, and she didn't really spend a lot of money on new clothing. She had a perfectly good, you know, black dress that she started wearing after her husband died. She also wore a black veil. And she just didn't think it was worth it to buy new clothes every, you know, couple months for the new fashion, which was very popular in the Gilded Age. So they called her the Witch of Wall Street, yet when New York City had financial troubles, they turned to her, and she became a personal loan agent to New York City and bailed the city out repeatedly. And also, when there was the big panic of 1909, she was one of the people they turned to for assistance.
Let's talk about Broadway, women who made Broadway. Is it on stage or off stage?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I was able to get in touch with a lot of scholars who just study Broadway and write about Broadway. And, you know, there was no good way to answer this question because there are so many phenomenal women in the history of Broadway. But Betty Comden is in the book. She's a lyricist.
Sure.
And, you know, she wrote New York, New York, it's a hell of a town. So, you know, we had to include her. And I put Fanny Bryce in there because she was so pioneering and sort of bringing humor to Broadway. And also, she was the one who helped take what was happening in the Follies and sort of before Broadway and make it sort of part of the core of what we think about as musical theater on Broadway. And then another person in the book, which I think will be unexpected to many people, Ethel Waters, who most of us think of as a singer and think about her music and her voice more than her Broadway performances. But she was so successful on Broadway that at one time she was believed to be the highest paid actor of any gender. So when women were still not really getting parity on Broadway, she was very well paid. She just commanded the respective audiences like you wouldn't believe. And without her, I think it would have been even longer till we saw any kind of integration or equality.
Well, gender or race,
exactly.
Integration, that's for sure. What do you take away from this book going, I bet you never knew, because there's at least two dozen I bet you never knew names in this book.
It's impossible for me to pick a favorite, but I did kind of fall in love with this woman, Sarah Josephine Baker, who's not the singer Josephine Baker, but she was one of the first women to become a physician in the United States, and she was able to attend medical school thanks to another woman in the book who was the first female doctor in the U.S., and she was interested in public health, and she worked at the turn of from the 19th to the 20th century at the city's public health department, and she had a low-level job, so they would send her out to do whatever sort of, you know, junk work that nobody else wanted to do. And the tenements were just a teeming mess at this point. And a lot of her male colleagues wouldn't even go into them. They thought it was disgusting. And she dressed like a man because she didn't want to sort of stand out. And she rolled up her sleeve, she put on her muck boots, and she went into the tenements to figure out how disease was spreading. And it became abundantly clear to her that there wasn't basic sanitation. People couldn't wash their hands after they changed a diaper, or they didn't even have diapers. And she began to set up a number of practices that ultimately dropped the infant mortality rate in the city by more than 50%. She created programs that called Little Mothers Guilds, where nurses would go in and teach 7 and 8 year old girls who were the ones caring for children in the city when their mothers were out at work, because poor women had to work to try and feed their families. One thing that could never happen today, but when she was trying to get people in Lower Manhattan vaccinated for smallpox, they couldn't get the men on the Bowery to come in. And so she devised this plan where she met with her staff at midnight, and a police officer accompanied them, and she brought the vaccines to them. So at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, these guys were sort of passed out, and she would just vaccinate them, and they would wake
up.
That's
incredible.
Isn't that incredible? But she succeeded in getting rid of smallpox in the city. So it was. She's an enormously impressive person, and I sure wish I had known more about her growing up.
Not a pioneer, but the pioneer of public health in New York City.
She is, and Elizabeth Milbank Anderson is another one in the book, and she is another wealthy woman who inherited all kinds of money from her family. And rather than, build a monument to herself and put her name on it. You won't see her name anywhere in the city. Every project she did is with the Milbank family name. But she gave her money to Barnard and actually purchased the campus that belongs to Barnard College today. But she also spent money and opened one of the first public bathhouses in the city. She had lost her son when he was very young to disease. And she said, she got in touch with public health folks and she said, what can I do to really help? And they said, people need a place to shower. They need a place to do their laundry. And so she built one.
Julie Shelfo is a journalist and author of The Women Who Made New York. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun to work on.